Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway, and we're going to share the experience of Dr. Diane Morrissey, who died. And this can be found on near-death.com. And of course, she returned to tell us the story. Here is her account. I bent over to pick up the plastic tubing. As I began to straighten up, I accidentally bumped the tubing on the edge of the tank. The water suddenly squirted across my face. The pain was so sharp it felt as if a knife were slitting my cheek. I screamed from the shock and pain, then felt a temporary relief as the water crossed over my molars. My reprieve was short-lived, however, as the electrified water rushed into my mouth. As my body bent over in shock, I had the most uncanny knowledge that death was ahead of me. I began to mourn the loss of everything I'd known. The earth, my home, my friends, and all I'd been aware of, all that I loved. Everything I believed to be true and lasting was slipping away from me. I was face to face with death, face to face with the unknown. My body was thrown backwards to one side by the current. My body crashed to the floor, thrown in such a force that my head went right through the drywall, about a foot above the floor. I never felt the injuries, however, because I was no longer in my body. I was actually watching my electrocution from above. How could I be out of my body and still be alive? I wondered, astonished. Suddenly, I was aware that I was inside a vast, seemingly infinite blackness. I wasn't sure where this blackness was in relationship to the earth, but for some reason, I wasn't afraid. My blackout period was brief, for I now found myself back in my home, but in a new form. I was transparent, yet it still looked like me. How elated I felt! Now, out of my body, I had no worries, no cares. Never had I felt like this when I was alive. My entire spirit body was transparent, and I was inside a glowing white light that extended out about 3 feet around me. At that moment, an awareness overtook me. I am not my physical body. This realization made me feel so free, so wonderful. My spirit was glowing a white light that illuminated the entire room. Then I was up near the ceiling again. Everything still looked the same, the furnishings, the walls, but there was a new awareness about the dimension of the scene, to the scene. It had become transparent. I could see everything more clearly than ever before, and like a scientist, I found myself looking at life through a microscope, discovering minuscule particles of matter normally invisible. I was not aware of the absence of physical sensations, yet I was feeling a heightened sense of awareness such as I'd never felt while alive. I knew I was different from the Diane I had been, but I also knew it was me, that I was me. It was similar to looking at your reflection in the mirror. You know you're not your reflection, but it does appear to be you. Now, I saw that everything was shrouded by a mist. Despite a lack of gravity, I could easily control my direction. And when I moved into the living room, I noticed that I had just walked through the glass coffee table. Wow, how did I do that? I marveled. Tuffy, my dog, suddenly entered the den and began nipping at my face and pawing at my arm, trying to get me to wake up. I knew that his relentless attempts to awaken my physical body wouldn't work, yet I was proud of him for trying, and even hoped his efforts might work. I wondered where his chum Penny was, and suddenly I was next to her in the backyard. I opened my mouth to talk to her and felt my tongue moving, but no sound came out. I could distinctly hear my voice, and then I realized it was coming from my mind. I tried several times to get Penny's attention, yelling, "Penny, can you see me? Penny, can you hear me?" Apparently she didn't, because there was no response. Next, I walked around my backyard. As I looked through the walls of my house toward the front sidewalk, I noticed a man walking down the street. Eagerly, I flew to him, right through the walls, and tried to get his attention. Staring deeply into his eyes, I said forcefully, "Can you help me? I need help." Then I tried to shake his shoulders, but he still didn't notice me. Frustrated, I tried to touch his shoulder to get him to look at me, and my hand went through his upper right shoulder blade and out his back. This startled me. What am I to do? I wondered, becoming upset when I realized that the man could neither see nor hear me. Instantly, I was back in my yard again, Penny beside me. I noticed that whenever I felt any apprehension, I was instantly moved to a place of greater comfort. On the way back to the den, I stopped right in the middle of the wall between rooms. I sensed that I was to look down at something fantastic, and as I gazed downward, I saw a long silver cord coming out of my spirit body right through the cheesecloth-like fabric I was wearing. The cord extended down and out in front of me, and as I turned around, I saw that the silver cord draped around and behind me like an umbilical cord. I followed it through the two hallway walls, and into my den, where I saw it attached to the back of my head of my physical body. The cord was about an inch wide and sparkled like Christmas tree tinsel. As soon as I saw that the silver cord was attached to my physical body, my spirit was thrust into a dark tunnel. I moved through it with great speed, traveling faster than I could have possibly imagined. Although the tunnel was filled with an all-consuming darkness, I felt peaceful and unafraid. When I came to the end of the darkness, I stepped into a new dimension. Here I could sense the presence of a loving spirit, sent, I knew, by God to greet me. Then I was back at the site of my physical body. Back and forth I traveled through the tunnel several times in succession, moving from the other side to my electrocuted physical body and back again. Each time I emerged from the tunnel, I was met by a radiant angel being who stood before me smiling. The being had no wings, and I sensed it was female. She was everything I'd ever imagined an angel would be. As she moved toward me, I walked to meet her. Her love surrounded me, and my spirit was filled with an almost unbearable joy. The love this angelic being radiated towards me made me feel that she cared more about me than anyone else ever had or could. Her love filled every particle of my being, every thought and every emotion within me. I felt completely comforted and reassured. She spoke by sending words directly into my mind. How can I hear her thoughts before she utters them? I wondered. Yet at the same time, I was hearing her questions. I was answering them. This marvelous being seemed to know all my thoughts instantly, just as I immediately knew hers. Although I was standing directly before her, I could see her from every angle, back, top, bottom, and both sides, like a cubist painting by Picasso. She walked closer and stood with me. Then we were both lifted about 10 inches into the air, as if we were on a platform moving upward. Extending her arm before her, she indicated that I was to look to my left. I did so, my heart and soul completely open to her, for I knew God had sent her to help me decide what I should do with my life. As I turned my eyes left, the entire scene changed into a life review, a vivid three-dimensional color display of my entire life. Every detail of every second, every feeling, every thought while I had been alive on Earth was displayed before me in perfect chronological order, from my birth until my electrocution. At the same time, to my amazement, I was reliving my my entire 28 years simultaneously. The best experiences brought me feelings of great joy, as if God were talking to me through the angelic being, sharing the highest moments of my life. I felt as if every spirit in heaven was watching me, applauding me, and letting me know that God approved of my caring, unselfish deeds. It was then that I asked myself, am I dead? Am I really dead? As the life review continued, I was shown two very special deeds I had performed. As these scenes were displayed before me, every emotion I had originally felt returned in full force. I also felt as if God and the angelic being were honoring me for having performed those deeds. I will never forget the love that surrounded me at that moment, or the joy that ran through me. Can you imagine being hugged by God and your angel? It's an experience that defies description. The first deed I witnessed had occurred the day I stopped my car to help push a woman's stalled station wagon out of the mainstream traffic and into a supermarket driveway. The driver had been struggling to push the car by herself and I felt compelled to give her a helping hand. After I had pushed her vehicle to safety, I rushed back to my car, afraid of getting a ticket for being double parked. In my haste, I hadn't given her a chance to thank me. While reviewing the scene, I was filled with indescribable feelings of love, which seemed to be directed to me from angelic beings high above me. Then my angel showed me a second vision, a scene I'd forgotten. I now saw myself at 17, when I'd worked at a convalescent hospital after school. I had grown fond of a toothless old woman who was no longer able to speak clearly and who never had visitors. She liked to suck on graham crackers before going to bed, but no one wanted to serve her because when she had finished, she would drool as she kissed the entire length of the arm of the person feeding her. While others avoided her, I willingly fed the cookies she had fed her the cookies she adored, seeing how happy this made her. When that scene was replayed before me, I felt as if every loving spirit in God's kingdom was thanking me in unison. I was amazed that such an act could have meant so much to God and to me. I felt humbled and very honored. A glow surrounded the radiant being as she presented my life review, continuing to communicate with me telepathically. As I viewed the scenes of my life, it felt as if I were absorbing many books all at once with perfect clarity. Finally, my life review was finished, and I was whisked away from the angelic being and returned to the tunnel. This time, I seemed to be falling through it, finally emerging in another room in another dimension. It was a world far more beautiful than any I could have ever imagined, a place of awesome serenity. The peace and calm I felt surpassed any previous notions I had had about heaven, and I knew in the deepest part of my soul that God was here. It was a rapturous place. I recognized that there were two aspects of me. My soul was my consciousness, everything that had made me who I had been and what I had become. My spirit, on the other hand, was the part of me that was now transparent and glowing, dressed in white. As I looked around me, I initially found everything dimly lit. Then I clearly saw a canopy bed resting in the center of an infinite vista stretched out before me. The bed was actually glowing within a heavenly radiance which enveloped me as well. To my astonishment, I saw a duplicate of myself lying on the bed. How can there be two of me, or three of me? I wondered, but I was instantly reassured by the loving vibrations around me. The feeling reminded me of being reassured by a dear, trusted friend saying, "Don't worry, all is well." There are two things I knew for certain. First, that I was Diane. And second, that my physical body was dead. I also knew that the duplicate of Diane on the other bed was another me, but I did not know what she represented. Now I was beginning to feel as if I were in three places at once. One part of me was the transparent Diane on the bed. The second was my physical body in the den, the body that no longer had life. The third part of me was my spirit, now out of its body. This part of me remained conscious and aware of all my experiences, both here and back on Earth. I knew beyond a doubt that I wanted to stay in this magnificent place where I felt so loved, so appreciated. How does one feel accepted by a place? Let me put it this way. As I walked toward the bed, I could actually feel heaven around me. The rapture and peace were beyond my wildest imaginings, and I wanted to stay here forever and ever. Do you remember how it felt long ago to be held and rocked in your mother's loving arms? Take this to the 100th power, and you're still light years away from the feeling of total peace and comfort that surrounded me. I felt the love of every mother in the universe being poured inside me for now and for all eternity. Although the bed before me was not my bed, the sheets looked amazingly like my own. I could hardly believe it when I realized that they were actually breathing, filled with life. The canopy bed was also alive, not made of the dense physical matter as it would have been created from Earth. As I walked closer to the bed, it radiated such love to me that I knew no earthly painter or craftsman could have created it. Not Leonardo da Vinci, not Rembrandt, no Michelangelo, not Monet. This bed had been made by God. Now the light was welcoming me, inviting me to recline on this heavenly creation. The transparent me was gone, and as I lay down, I felt the lace caressing me with rapture, peace, and love. I was moved to tears of joy. At that moment, I knew that nothing ever dies. Nothing ever dies. I also knew that I would never die. If I stayed in this place, I knew I would be alive, but in a different way than I had been before my electrocution. I would still be Diane, and I would still have my memories. But I would also feel this unbelievable love around me forever. How I longed to stay. Then I sensed that I must look to my right through the lace. There I could see a pinpoint of light coming from the next room, the next dimension, the infinity beyond. I knew I must see more clearly, so with my right hand lifted up the lace. I knew I had no choice but to look. The pinpoint of light became a brilliant white beam, a trillion times brighter than the brightest sun imaginable, and began to move toward me. At first, it appeared to be bands of multifaceted light being stretched and pulled together. I knew this light was the presence of God. I was awestruck, overwhelmed by the light, the love of God for me. I knew I could go into this light, which was part of a tremendous force. And although the light was brighter than 1,000 suns, it didn't hurt my eyes. I was going to have to choose between staying in the light and going back to Earth. Somehow I knew that if I went into the next room, into the light, I could never return to my body. I felt torn between two desires, wanting to go into the light and wanting to touch something tangible and retain my connection with all that was physical. Both desires grew stronger. The light became more intense, more radiant, more loving. As I lifted the lace and extended my hand toward the brilliance, wanting to touch the light, it rushed under the lace and touched the outstretched middle finger of my right hand. As soon as the light touched me, I was transformed. The light and my spirit merged. I had entered the light of God, and all sense of my spirit body was gone. My consciousness, fully alive, was now totally connected to God. Within the light, I knew that everyone and everything is connected to it. God is in everyone, always and forever. Within the light was this cure for all diseases. Within the light was all knowledge of every planet, every galaxy, every universe. Indeed, the light was wisdom and love beyond all comprehension. Being one with the light was like suddenly knowing every grain of sand on every planet, in every galaxy, in every universe, and at the same time knowing why God had put each grain of sand in its particular place. The light held within it the knowledge of every book in every language from beginning of creation to the end of time. The light knew why every author had put every word exactly where it was. The light conveyed the message that every grain of sand, every plant, rock, animal, and human being has a purpose, and that nothing ever dies, because after death, there is a new life on the other side. The light and my spirit mingled for what felt like an eternity. But eventually I began to sense with great urgency that the time had come to choose whether I would stay here or return to physical life. How could I decide? Suddenly my spirit was back in the tunnel. Again, when I emerged from the tunnel, the angelic being was waiting for me. Now, I noticed that her hair was brown and turned under just above her heavenly shoulders. Each of her features was now more clearly visible as I paid closer attention to them. Breathing did not seem necessary for her or for me, yet we were both full of life. She looked at me and asked telepathically, "What do you want, Diane?" I said, "I want to go into the light. I want to touch things, and I want to touch things." She asked me thousands of questions at the same time, and I responded to them, communicating directly from my mind to hers. Her angelic voice asked, "Have you ever felt this much love?" I answered, "No." "Have you ever felt this much joy?" "No." "Have you ever felt this much peace?" "No." "Have you ever felt this much rapture?" "No." "Have you ever experienced this much bliss?" "No." "Have you ever felt this much kindness?" "No." Thousands of questions, one within the other, one on top of another, all of the questions at once, yet separately. I wanted desperately to go into the light again. Then the radiant being asked, "Are you sure, Diane?" "Yes," I replied, "of course I was sure." I was suddenly thrust forward through the tunnel, and when I looked down, I was aghast to see my physical body below me. It looked dead and lifeless, but this time I was disinterested whether I saved it or not. What mattered to me was the light. I wanted the light. I was again thrust forward through the tunnel. The angelic being was still there, waiting for me to truly decide about my life, waiting for me to decide about my death, waiting for me to decide about my future. This time she was even more radiant, more loving. I had never imagined such bliss, feeling such bliss, and I felt boundless love for her. She asked, "Have you ever been in a world without pain?" I answered, "No." She asked, "Have you ever been in a world without war?" I answered, "No." "Have you ever been in a world without anger, without rage, without grief, without sadness, without envy, without poverty, without jealousy, without worry, without tears?" Again, thousands of questions, all at the same time. I answered them all in the same way, emphatically, "No." I knew that no other place in the universe could feel as good, as loving, as peaceful as this heavenly place. For some reason, however, the angelic being sent me into the tunnel again, back and forth through many tunnels. I wondered why. I still wanted to touch, but I wanted the light, both desires tugging at my spirit. I finally found myself back in my house, once again looking down at my physical body. This time I realized that my physical body had the potential to live again. I had begun to care less and less whether I returned to my physical body, but at this moment, looking down at my body, my attitude underwent a change. I thought, how sad. She has done so very little. I realized Diane hadn't touched as many people as she could have while alive. And I again realized how life could be enriched by touching others' lives more deeply and meaningfully. While alive, as Diane, I had always known that my life was full of certain pleasures, a beautiful home, a good job, a nice car, warm friends, a wonderful loving family, a beloved best friend, and a musical career I loved. But none of these mattered anymore, I thought, reversing myself again. Only the light mattered. Only God mattered. To my surprise, I began to feel a persistent pulling sensation from about 4 inches above my navel. I tried to resist it, for I sensed a new process was beginning, one that might take me from this place, from God. I didn't want to leave behind such feelings of elation. Yes, I wanted to touch things, but I wanted the light even more. Suddenly, I wasn't rushing through the tunnel again. When I emerged, I was up near the ceiling in the den, looking down at my physical body below me. Then, without warning, I was thrust swiftly back into my body, entering through the back of my neck, with my spirit legs and arms together, like a diver doing a jackknife. As I re-entered my body, I knew that God within me could never die. And I knew that I could never die. For a moment, I actually saw myself half in and half out of my body. Then, with a jolt, I landed fully back into my body. Oh my, I thought, how could I have chosen to come back? I want to be in the light again. Tears ran down my cheeks and I wept, desolate about the choice that had been made. Had it really been a choice? I couldn't believe that I had decided to come back. I now believe that one reason I was sent back was to help people feel better about dying and to learn that death is not an end, but a new beginning. That is the end of Diane Morrissey's experience. And wow, that's a powerful one, isn't it? I mean, she experiences just about, I mean, pretty close to all the major components of near-death experiences, you know, from the light to the void to the tunnel to seeing, you know, a guide or you know, loving companion, whatever, to seeing landscape, to seeing I don't know if she said she saw natural landscape, I can't remember now, but she saw a room, you know, and a place anyway, and saw had a life review. She had an experience of being in the light and being part of all knowledge, merging with the light. I mean, just the gamut. This has just got everything in it, it seems like. And normally that would be suspicious to me, because I'm like, yeah, what's the likeliness of somebody hitting so many of the things? But no, it strikes me as real. It really strikes me as legitimate. And there are a couple of things that I caught that I found very interesting. First off, the silver cord. Now, many of you may have heard of this cord. Maybe many of you haven't. This is something that I have heard in near-death literature, as well as sometimes other places. I kind of had to look it up the first time I came across this. I'm like, cord, what? You know, like some kind of spiritual umbilical cord? What is this? And I looked it up, and apparently it's a thing. You know, people are aware of this idea of your spirit being attached to your body via a cord of some kind. And I don't know what to make of it, honestly. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, what is this cord? Is it some kind of spiritual thing that keeps your body alive while you're out of your body? Or is it some kind of thing that that makes sure that you can always find your body? I don't know. It's kind of unclear. There seems to be multiple purposes for it, and it also seems to be uncommon for people to notice it. And it's interesting too that, you know, you could say it's like spider web, tiny, whatever. But this person says it was like an inch thick, I think, is the way Diane described it. And she doesn't explain whether that cord continues to be visible throughout the experience, only that it seems to show, you know, she follows it back to her body at that one point, and then she goes on with her experience, and it doesn't seem like it doesn't come up again. I don't know if that means she didn't see it anymore, didn't notice it, or what. But there's something to a cord, and silver is the most common color that I hear for it. This is interesting that it's described as sparkly like tinsel, Christmas tinsel. That's kind of interesting. Again, I'm not exactly sure what to make of the cord, but I have heard, just in case you come across it, I have heard of three different cords, that sometimes one will be broken or two will be broken and there's one remaining or something. I don't know if it's a symbolic thing. I don't know if there really is a cord, or if it's a some kind of representation of something, a visual representation of something else. I don't know. But it shows up sometimes in these things. Another thing, she says that there are two aspects. She recognizes that there are two aspects of her. And I'm confused when I read this, because usually people talk about the soul being the spirit, and how you've got the spirit and the body. And then sometimes they'll talk about what I consider, or what I have come to call, intelligent consciousness. And I suspect that's what we're experiencing here, though it's confusing, because here's how she says it. She says, in this rapturous place, I recognized that there were two aspects of me. My soul was my consciousness. Okay, so we got that. I'm assuming this means intelligent consciousness. Everything that had made me who I'd been and what I'd become. So that was her. Then she's got her spirit, on the other hand, was part of me that was now transparent and glowing, dressed in white. So you've got the intelligent consciousness, then you've got the spirit as a separate part of her, as she says it. And then she says, as I looked around me, I initially found everything dimly lit. I saw a canopy bed resting in the center of a vista stretched out before me. The bed was actually glowing, yada-da. And then she says, I saw a duplicate of myself lying on the bed. This is what kind of throws a wrench in my assumption that this is intelligent consciousness and then spirit, which engulfs the spirit, or the intelligent consciousness, and then those together can be in the body. But it seems like there's something else going on, because she's got this duplicate of herself. And then she says that she goes, she feels a draw toward it, and lies on the bed. And I don't know if she enters this body or what, but she goes on this bed, and it radiated such love to her, she says, that I knew no earthly painter or craftsman could have created this bed. Not sure what to make of this bed and the duplicate herself. I don't know whether that's a symbolic thing, or whether there was part of her that was there. I don't know. Not sure what to make of that duplicate self. But it's interesting. And I do like that she says that there are two aspects of me that are separate from the spirit. But that seems to be kind of a nice preliminary introduction to that, to what's going to happen next, because then she says that her spirit body just kind of vanishes at some point, or it disappears. You know, I don't know whether it's left behind, or it may just, you know, silence into the background kind of thing. And then when the light touches her, and as it touches her, she merges with this light. And it says, the light and my spirit merged. I had entered into the light of God, and all sense of my spirit body was gone. My consciousness, fully alive, was now totally connected with God. And at that point, she starts having this all-encompassing, universal, knowing everything about everything, and feeling, basically kind of becoming completely one with God. And this is something, when we talk about these different aspects of the person, this potentially clarifies for me, what a lot of people have as a bit of a controversy about the kind of being God is. Because you'll hear some people say, I saw God, I talked to him, I embraced him, he is a physical being or spiritual being, however you might refer that. But some will say physical, some will say spirit only, others will say he's this cosmic light that fills the immensity of space and so forth. And perhaps this suggests that all three are actually the case. That we are not just dual beings, as we've talked about before, of spirit and body, but rather a triad being, if you will, with a body, a spirit, and an intelligent consciousness, or you might say mind, or whatever you want to call that, that really root self. And it appears, this is one of those things where my religious traditions and what things just seem to make sense versus what I seem to read come into, not conflict, but there's clearly something that I don't know about them. You know, there's a gap in my understanding, because it almost seems as though we as individuals, let's just say me as an individual, to make this clear, me as an individual, I have a body, this physical self, and I have a spirit, which is that spirit self, which travels and does all this stuff. And then there's this intelligence self that is my deepest thoughts and so forth, which is not necessarily bound to my ego and so forth. And those three, I've always assumed, have to be together in order to even exist, or at least to survive, because you separate the body from the spirit, boom, it dies. Well, from near-death experiences, we learn not necessarily, and not necessarily immediately either. Sometimes there's a few things that the body kind of does on its own, such as, you know, trying to get up after an accident, or screaming, or even sometimes talking to other people, which is a weird one. But and then the spirit is maybe near and kind of influencing the body, but not completely controlling it. And so there is a separation there where the spirit and the body can be independent of each other to some extent. And then it appears from these kinds of things, like the merging and when sometimes people find themselves just this floating consciousness with no apparent body and feeling this oneness with everything, that they're apparently separated from their spirit. That, I don't know if that's actually the case or what, but if it is the case, and if it's possible for those three to be separated individually somehow, why couldn't it be that way with God? Why couldn't it be that way with Jesus? So when people say, I know God, I experienced him in my near-death experience, and he's this brilliant light that fills the entirety of space and the universe and all known and unknown universes. Well, that can be absolutely true if he also has a body that is capable of holding and touching and of a spirit that is also capable of all the gifts and abilities that a spirit has with, you know what I'm saying? I don't think that it's really all that important that we understand that, but what it does do is it provides a little bit of a framework to be able to deal with these questions of, wait a minute, I thought this was the case. Well, maybe that's the case and this is the case. Maybe they're both the case. One thing for sure, our spirits or our ultimate eternal selves are much deeper and more advanced and more dynamic beings than we ever imagined on Earth. We know that much just from reading these experiences. So the idea that there may be even more than what we're initially getting out of most of these experiences, it totally makes sense to me. And so, you know, whatever that is, whether that be a three-part to our nature, or whether that it be that our consciousness can, you know, I don't know, have influence on multiple other aspects of our being. You know, some people have suggested, for example, that the spirit or the consciousness or whatever is never in the body, but it's somewhere else transmitting out like a radio signal to the earth, to the earth body, and is being controlled by it remotely. And I don't know if that's true. I don't fully understand what they mean by that, but I also don't believe it myself, but I'm open to the possibility that there's more going on here than what I understand, and that should, you know, that makes it easier to hear these things and go, huh, that's interesting, rather than going, okay, this sounds nutty. You know, we don't have to reject it outright. We can put it on a shelf and say, I'm going to put that on my shelf so that if I see something similar, I can compare and see what I have to learn about both. And that's what I'm doing with this. Very interesting. Very interesting. It's also interesting to me how wishy-washy she seems in her experience. She wants to go back to the physical. She wants to experience the physical. And, you know, she says she wants to be able to touch things. I'm not sure that is... I think that's the best wording that she could come up with. I'm guessing, and again, this is me, I'm guessing what she was really saying was that there was more for her to experience that required physicality to experience, and she wanted to do that. And, you know, like she'd seen in her life review, you're able to touch people better in the body and be able to really make a difference than you can in the spirit, at least toward other mortal beings who are also suffering and need compassion and love and so forth. It's easier to offer that love and compassion here in this body. And I don't know if she's saying, she said that she wanted to be able to touch things. Maybe that's partly what she meant. But at some point she says, looking down at my body, my attitude underwent a change. I thought, how sad. She has done so very little. I realized Diane hadn't touched as many people as she could have while alive. I realized how life could be enriched by touching others' lives more deeply and meaningful. So it could be that she's wanting to go back and touch people more and touch the world around her, make it better, as well as physical touch. You know, it sounds like she didn't have too many physical feelings about her spirit body, though that's not completely clear. It just, that would explain partly why she wants to be able to touch things again. Anyway, very, very interesting near-death experience, and one that I find great insight in. So, if you would like to contact the podcast, either to share your own experience or to perhaps ask a question, I love questions, or to simply share a comment, I would love to hear from you. And if you do not want your comment shared, just say so in either the call or the email. But or if you'd like to remain anonymous, that's perfectly acceptable as well. Otherwise, I'll plan on sharing your name and the experience that you share. And you can do that by emailing neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com or by calling 970-NDE-CAST. That will give you 3 minutes of phone call time. After that 3 minutes, just call right back and continue your message. It's just an answering machine. There's no one picking up and answering. It's all electronic. So thank you, all of you. I have really been enjoying doing these podcasts. I noticed that recently, I think probably about 2 weeks ago from now, we hit over 100 podcasts that have been released, and many people are going back into the archives. And so if you can't find the archives further back than just the few that you can see on your podcast reader or website or whatever, go to neardeathexperiencepodcast.org and you should be able to scroll down and see everything. Once it gets to the bottom, you can click, you know, next page or page two or whatever, and you'll go on to the next. I had it fit as many as I could on the page, which was 100, and I thought that would be a good way to measure when we hit 100, once they start kicking into the next page. That's why I didn't notice when we hit 100 podcasts, but I'm really grateful for this, because I wasn't really worried that we'd run out of material, but as it is, I feel like we've only barely scratched the surface of how many near-death experiences are out there, at least the experiences that are worth sharing and expounding on. There's tons of just somebody, you know, popping out of their body, they're seeing things for a minute, and then they pop back in, you know, during a surgery or whatever. There's tons of those kinds, and that may even make up 80% of the near-death experiences out there. I'm just throwing that percentage out there, but it could be that that's most of what people experience, and yet there's so many of these that are so profound and so detailed that we could spend every day doing it, and probably throughout my entire life never touch on all of them that have been published or shared. Not to mention the fact that with 700 plus people having near-death experiences every day, and we'll say that 10% of those people share it, and 10% of those people actually publish it, and then 10% of those people have experiences beyond just the simple ones, then you're still talking about more experiences than I would be able to share in all of this. But I want to share as many as possible, because I want this information known. I want people to know that this is happening all the time. This is not some strange phenomenon that's rare and bizarre. It's really not. These are so common that we have to start looking at them. We have to start making heads or tails of them. We have to look at them and say, okay, we don't have to share the same religious values, but we've got to look at this stuff and say, what's really going on then? What is it that we can learn from this experience that people are having? Because saying the light in the brain because of the brain falling asleep or whatever, I'm sorry, that is, it's to the point where that is a laughable claim. It's just not, it just doesn't fit. There's just so many accounts of these kinds of experiences, and each one so unique while having such similar elements, that you can't tell me that the brain made this up somehow. Anyway, if you have an iTunes account, please share a review, an honest review on there, give a rating, and that will help people find the show. Share these shows with a friend if there's one that you think might do good to provide somebody some grief help, or maybe they just have questions, maybe they have suicidal thoughts, maybe they have you know, fears about the future or about their lives or about their family or friends. Honestly, I haven't seen anything that this doesn't touch lives from learning about. So, with that, thank you all of you so much again for listening.